I'll call to order the May 25th meeting of the Sussex County Council. First item is the approval of the agenda. Mr. Baker, do you have any changes?
Yes, I do have one suggested change. Under executive session, we'd like to strike the personnel item.
Does council have any other changes? Not, I'll entertain a motion to approve the agenda. Second, please.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Approval of minutes in your packet this week were the May 18th minutes. Are there any changes? If not, I'll consider them approved. Reading of correspondence, Mr. Moore.
Yes, Mr. President, I have several items to read. The first is a letter from the town of Ellendale, and it's addressed to Councilwoman Joan Deaver. The town council of Ellendale would like to thank you for providing the town grant money of $1,000 to cover the expense of our town-wide spring cleanup. We were able again this year to obtain two drop-off dumpsters. The cleanup was a success. Again, we'd like to thank you for your assistance. Mrs. Dolores Price, Ellendale Town Council President. The next is a letter from the town of South Bethany to Mr. Robert Stewart. Dear Mr. Stewart, this letter is to express our appreciation to Joe Hoppel, Education Coordinator for Sussex County EMS for CPR and AED training for our town staff. Once he was contacted by Chief Brian Martin of the Bethany Beach Volunteer Fire Company, he immediately contacted me and made all of the arrangements for the training. He did an outstanding professional job in conducting the training session here at Town Hall. Please pass along our thanks to him and thank you for providing this service to our town. Melvin A. Cusick, Town Manager. And lastly, I have a letter, and actually it was a thank you note sent to Mike Jones. Mike, thank you so much for helping make my home enjoyable again. I really enjoy the roof windows that I can open and close without busting up my hands. Plus my sliding doors that open and close without problems. The work was done professionally. I'm so pleased there are not even enough words of gratitude. Thanks to Mr. LeCates, Nicole, and all involved, also for completing the work when you promised. I'm so grateful. Thank you so very much, Marcy Gormis. And that is all the correspondence, Mr. President.
Council, have any correspondence?
I have one from the Milton Theater.
Ms. Deaver?
The Milton Theater is writing to thank us for they have writing to appreciate sincere appreciation for selecting the Milton Theater to be the recipient of $2,500 grant from the Sussex County Council. The money was earmarked for building preservation costs and has already been used to shore up the theater's roof in preparation for the installation of a new roof. And I do have another letter which we've received in March, and I think we should acknowledge it. It was from State Representative John Atkins. I'll just read the first paragraph. I write in reference to a Sussex County government policy of which I've recently become aware and which I believe may be unnecessarily restrictive in light of important public policy considerations. It's my understanding that pursuant to 2607 of the Sussex County Code, an employee of Sussex County who retires and subsequently becomes an elected official for Sussex County must either serve as an elected official without pay or waive the employee's county pension. And I'd like to put that letter in the record.
Okay. Any other correspondence from council?
Just the American Legion thanked us for their donation, and South Bethany's cottage tour also got a thank you. I'll submit those.
Very good. There's no other correspondence. We'll turn the meeting over to Mr. Baker.
Thank you. The first item is a proclamation regarding Delaware's amateur radio operators. And with us today, we have Mr. Walt Palmer and some other representatives who'd like to come on up to the stand, if you like. And I'll go ahead and read the proclamation. Proclaiming June 2010 as a month to recognize Delaware's amateur radio operators, whereas Delaware has more than 2,200 licensed amateur radio operators with more than 550 of those individuals residing in Sussex County, all of whom have demonstrated their value in public assistance by providing vital emergency radio communications in times of need. And whereas these amateur radio operators donate their service free of charge to the state, in the interest of the citizens of Sussex County, the state of Delaware, and the United States and around the world. And whereas Sussex County amateur radio operators provided thousands of volunteer hours during the back-to-back blizzards of 2010 in the interest and spirit of providing emergency communications and reporting observations to the citizens and governments of the state and its three counties. And whereas Sussex County amateur radio organizations, including the Lewis Amateur Radio Society, Nanticoke Amateur Radio Club, Sussex Amateur Radio Association, Sussex County Amateur Radio Emergency Service, and Sussex County Radio Amateur Civil Emergency Service are among those groups providing an invaluable service to the citizens of our county. Whereas these amateur radio operators are on alert for any emergency, large and small, local or worldwide, and practice their communication skills during the American Radio Relay League's Field Day exercise. And whereas this year's Amateur Radio Field Day will take place on June 26, 27, 2010. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Sussex County Council hereby proclaims June 2010 as Amateur Radio Month in recognition of this important emergency preparedness exercise and call upon all citizens to pay tribute to amateur radio operators for their dedication to public service. And I know Mr. Chip Stevenson is also here today from the Emergency Operations Center, and I know, like, during the February snowstorms, there were representatives at the EOC the entire week, and there were many others monitoring the storm and giving us good reports, and this is typical of what they do during Northeasters as well as and the snowstorms.
Can you tell us a little bit about your organization?
Yes, sir. We're a group of volunteers. I represent the Sussex Amateur Radio Association and also Sussex County Amateur Radio Emergency Service. All of our work is done on a volunteer basis. We purchase our own equipment, take courses to get our amateur radio license, and we also take FEMA courses, so we're up to date on the latest emergency theory and so forth that's required to be a good volunteer. We don't just show up. We know what we're supposed to do. We've got about 100 members in our club, and it's a great hobby, and I'd like to offer each of you the invitation to come to our field day opportunity on the 26th, if you could please give these to the members, on the 26th of June at the Marble Museum. I don't mean this as a commercial, but it would give you the opportunity to see what we do, spend a few minutes, talk to some amateurs, and get a better feel of our great hobby and the value that it offers. Thank you.
And you call yourself hams?
Yes, sir. the proudest one.
I thought we had. Sam Wilson, he's got your proclamation on that note.
Jerry and I would like to, from the Sussex County Council, proclamation June 2010 as a month to recognize Delaware amateur radio operators. Now, therefore, it be resolved that Sussex County Council hereby proclaims 2010 as amateur radio month. In recognition of this important emergency preparedness exercise, we call upon all citizens to pay tribute to amateur radio operators and their dedication to public service. We got a little bit more in between, but I thought you guys could read well as I could. So,
sir, I'm probably better. He's the president of the Lewis Amateur Radio Club.
Pleased to meet you.
He's got our members in Joe Marino. He's a member of the
Marino Marion. Sam, good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Get Chip Stevenson in there, get that picture.
Got a wide angle lens.
There you go.
It's really hard to get in center. Chip, you put them all that line.
Yeah.
camera.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Enjoy it. Thank you. See you.
Our club will be at the Overfalls during field day if anybody can't make it up here.
We'll see you. We'll see you.
Did you tell him, Sam, your nickname was Ham?
That's what it was in school. Sam the Ham.
They're in good company here, aren't they? Mr. Baker, what else you got?
Next item is planning session proposal. The fiscal 2011 budget recommendation, which we discussed last week, includes a number of different capital project proposals, and we wanted to review with you a few of these. And we sent out a list of the non-sewer and water items that was in your packet last week. And this proposed budget, of course, is a plan for next year, and as well as there's a five-year plan in the back of the budget also with our estimates of what we feel the needs will be in the 5 years for capital items. The proposed budget does include many items and initiatives, but we wanted to just show you and take a look at some of these. If you had any questions or concerns, we could try to address them, and or if we can't answer them, perhaps some of our staff here. The first group of items are smaller items that are in the general fund budget. These are estimated amounts. They are not exact amounts. We are able to purchase items lower than the budget amount. But for budget purposes, we try to get a price in advance to get an idea of what they'll cost. If I could highlight a few of these, or just I'll just hit just some of the larger ones. On the second page, there's a software package for emergency preparedness. This would provide a real-time crisis information to our agencies involved in emergency management. When we have a major emergency event like this, those back-to-back snowstorms, and we all of a sudden get a deluge of phone calls, and we're trying to track them, a software package would help us in that the call takers could enter in information, forward it to DelDOT or DENREC or Delaware Electric Co-op or whatever the concern is, and we could track information about the call so that when they call back and say, look, my electric's still off or I need to get to the hospital, and the call taker can look on the screen and follow up and say, yes, we've dispatched the Greenwood Fire Company or whatever to come, but they're on their way, whatever. But right now, when we had so many calls at one time, and Chip is here, we had papers, we were handwriting all the information on papers, and then someone called back and say, well, no one's been here, and we're trying to, it's very difficult to track the information about the particular emergency event. This is probably a very high number, we think, but if there is a program out there that addresses this, and that was one of the items we've got in the proposed budget. It's not something that we anticipate using every day, but it is something that when we have an event like that, I think it would help. It could help substantially by having all the information together and computerized. Down at the bottom of that page, there are two supervisor replacement vehicles for the paramedics, which are strictly replacement vehicles. If you go to the next page, page 3, these are the larger items. Airport stormwater improvements. These are needed for out of our industrial park. And before the Conservation District approves additional projects at the industrial park, they would like to see progress on this project for stormwater improvements. So that is included again in this year's budget. Again, extending the main runway from 5,000 to 5,500 feet. That is FAA grant eligible. This would cover the design and the environmental assessment cost for the project. The environmental assessment is required by the FAA, and of course the design we would have to do. And that is 95% FAA covered and 2.5% state covered. So that one doesn't cost us a whole lot.
Didn't some time back the thought was to extend that thing to 1,000 feet versus 500?
Yes.
And didn't the county pay for environmental assessment then for that?
Yes. And we have...
And was paid again?
Yes, we did receive back a letter. We sent a letter to Representative Castle. He followed up with the FAA. The FAA sent us back a letter to Mr. Hicken. But the letter basically explains their position, and they felt like the environmental assessment would be less detailed than before because we used some of the information we've already attained from the previous environmental assessment. However, it still looks like it's still a very substantial cost, $250,000, the estimated cost. So we are following up with more letters to our congressional delegation to see if they can help us with that. I mean, it's really from our standpoint, I mean, it's not costing the county that much. It's costing the taxpayers that
amount. Right.
But it also, it holds us up. You know, that's another 6 months, I believe, Jim, to the whole process of redoing that environmental assessment before you get into the design.
I don't understand quite if the county paid to have an assessment done, you were going to extend it 1,000 feet. Now it's only going to be 500, so that's the same footage you were going to do, but just half what you're going to do before, same environmental area.
Right, we agree.
Why we got to pay $250,000? That don't make any sense.
Right.
Somebody needs a job.
I guess. That's just whatever. Okay. We'll fight that battle later, I guess.
Yeah, we will follow up with our with letters and try to continue again to work on that. Down at the bottom of that page, wetland mitigation related to the runway extension. this is estimated for a cost of $600,000. We have on the next page, we have a generator for this county administration building, which would help us with our data processing and information technology equipment here, our servers and whatnot that store information. That would be especially helpful to help during power outages. Right now, we have a UPS unit below this room that was purchased with the when the building was built in 95, but it's becoming less reliable, and actually the only thing it helps with is emergency lighting in the building. You know, it doesn't provide electricity for the where the servers are or other offices. It's very limited.
That's something I think you surely need to do.
Yeah, I think it would.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next one is a generator, replacement generator at the record storage center, which is the old EOC. And this is primarily needed to maintain the communications equipment on the tower by the old EOC, which is essential for emergency communications for the radio systems. And then the next one is a new emergency communications building. Right now, the county's communications staff, Mr. Chip Larson, his group are all out behind the old EOC. I mean, it's sort of a mishmash of different buildings that have been added to over the years, shed-type and garage-type buildings. Now, the state of Delaware, their communications section has expressed interest in this project in their own building. And so what we have here is an estimated cost for a new building, which would be half funded by the state, half used by the state, and then half used by the county. And that's in the proposed capital improvement budget.
It also gets your mobile communications vehicle out of the weather, sitting outside all the time.
Right.
That costs
right
a few hundred thousand dollars.
Yes. Right now, that vehicle, the command center vehicle, is stored outside. And it would give them enough room, a bay, and that sort of thing to handle fire trucks with the various work that is done with the radios and the equipment for the fire trucks. The last item on that page I know you're aware of is the solar energy project at the EOC, which would be funded $660,000 by a federal grant. On the next page, the first item is an integrated software program, which you may recall has been discussed and regarding improvements for the assessment, planning and zoning, accounting, utility billing, and treasury division to increase our efficiency there. And then we have replacement of the Greenwood Library, the first part of this. There is $250,000 in the state grant in the proposed governor's budget for the Greenwood Library. So this would, the $500,000 would include the $250,000 that the state would contribute, plus at $250,000 towards of county funds, which would be the 50% match. Now, this library is only 3,754 square feet. The state will only fund libraries that are a minimum of 10,000 square feet. So, and then the last item is continuing funding for property acquisitions, especially related to the airport or other that we are involved in. There are some other items there listed on the last page, sewer planning studies for new. Sometimes we will receive a request from individuals, a petition for a new sewer district, for instance, or if we proceed with a Western Sussex sewer district, then for Greenwood in particular, then the funding would be there towards planning studies if needed. And that is $75,000. So there's, I just tried to mention some of the larger items, but
I think it's good that you've reduced all these into one document. It's something that we can talk about during the public hearing, I suppose.
Yes, sure.
Just as a point of clarity, the integrated software program for assessment, planning, and zoning, accounting, that's a big deal, isn't it? I mean, that's replacing a long-time existing system.
Yes, we have a system now working through the, it's called legacy computer that we have now. It's an IBM computer, basically, that the software has been developed over 30-plus years for assessment, planning, and zoning, not so much planning and zoning, but assessment, the tax office in particular. And what we would, and then the accounting department has its own program that was purchased maybe 15 maybe 10 years ago, 97, okay. So that program we'd like to take a look at also. So the idea is that if we could, there are new programs out there that would coordinate our system and provide, do things that we cannot do now. There are some things that we do now that with a new program we won't be able to do in the future, most likely, because when you buy a package program, you can't, it's more difficult to customize it for your specific needs. So the advantage of what we do today is that we can customize it, but it's just not quite as up to date, and we're not able to integrate it like we will be with a new software package.
What about computerizing planning and zoning itself?
That is part of this project, mm-hmm. to consider, you know, zoning categories and what is, and develop a history of zoning matters.
History. Would there be, for instance, online access to current applications as they proceed?
Yes, that could be. That certainly we can include that as part of what we'll look at. Mm-hmm. Yes.
People would be able to get the status at any time online.
Well, they only get the whole application, possibly.
Yeah.
You know what the application is. So
from start to finish.
They don't have to drive to Georgetown, I guess. Right.
Well,
I mean, it'd be nice if we could do that.
Some of them are very, I think, Mr. Lang has folders and folders on some of them. They're really, I don't know if you want everything, but we could certainly have some of the most important information about a particular application.
Well, particularly with subdivisions, my district has lots and lots of pending subdivisions. I'd like people to be able to know what they are and where they are in the process.
Right.
Because they're major developments.
Okay.
The other thing, you know, Dave, we don't do is, and if we're talking about these things, is we approve a lot of these conditional uses and things that have, you know, sunsetting type of requirements with them. It would be nice that, do we have it now? Maybe we do. A subdivision or a conditional use automatically informs the Planning and Zoning Department that the application is about to expire or is expiring, or is there anything, or is it something we just, upon request or somebody inquires, that it's kind of a complaint-driven type of thing, you know? What about this
Mr.
community
Lank,
and we go look at it?
Mr. Lank has, he's not here right now,
right.
But he, John, could you run and get Grab Lawrence? Thanks. I know he has been working as a request from Mrs. Deaver on trying to keep a computerized record of applications and look back, and he can better explain where he's at on that. But
right.
So, but he has been working on that with a spreadsheet-type program to develop a history of each project.
Because many people come in here with
right.
an idea of doing something, and the idea never, you know, happens, and nothing ever occurs. But then I don't think anybody ever really officially sends them a notice and says, you know, your application is about to expire or it has expired. But just there's been no, you know, I don't think.
No, I believe we do send notices.
They do, too.
Yeah,
they do.
We send them. Yeah.
Do they? Yep. Okay. Because, I mean, I don't know how far they go back. I know that we've been trying to do it with recent ones, but I'm just saying there's a lot of old ones.
Yeah.
Well, I have discovered in the files that there are some that have expired and that we didn't do anything with. So it's not a fail-safe, whatever it is, that we're using.
I think we're trying to do it with current ones. I think in the last year or so they've plugged in something, right?
Mr. President?
Yes.
I do know that in the past, Mr. Lang has sent out letters on subdivisions and letting them know that the sunsetting provisions apply, speaking of him.
We're talking about computers, and your name came up.
I don't know anything about computers. What's the question?
Well, George had a question.
Just I'll give it a shot.
We're talking about getting new programs for different departments and things, and Mrs. Deaver brought up planning and zoning, and I just something triggered with when we have things that expire, is there any way we could have those so they would automatically come up and...
Yeah, we're working on that. We're doing a list right now of all the conditional uses, all the changes of zones, all the subdivisions.
Okay. Good.
We try to get into that mood.
Okay.
We have to basically do it by going to a file and pulling the file to verify.
Yeah, no.
But most of them we have noted in the book by hand, but we need to do something on computer so everybody has access to it.
Yes.
Right. Is the process going to be that you're going to try to notify the applicant that it's about to expire or it has expired? I mean, are we going to go through a series of warnings and then?
In the past, it's been a notice that it's expired.
Just
expired. But what we do then is that we go to the commission, the staff, Shane or I go to the commission and verify.
Okay.
And I think we've done 14, but that was more in the area around the first anniversary of the ordinance change to allow for sunsetting. So that was like 2003 or 4 or something like that.
Okay.
We haven't had any since because everything was, but we're getting right to the point now there's going to be a lot of them that could be sunset because the activity's not there. The economy's stopped everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So in that situation, because of the economy, we would probably send notice that they're about to. And they need to provide us with the
I don't know what our requirements are, if we have any requirements, Everett, on notification. I know on certain things we don't have to notify, and whatever we do it out of courtesy. So it gets to a certain point, how often should we, or how much expense should we go through, you know, sending out notifications for, and the time it takes, I guess, employees to figure, like you said, to go back and research all this. But if you send out something and say it's about to expire, then you come back and say it's getting closer.
They're getting a notice on subdivisions.
Right.
They get a notice when they get final approval.
Mm-hmm.
That this
right.
approval is valid for 5 years, and you have to be substantially under construction.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a definition of substantial construction. It relates to the site work's been done, stormwater's done.
And then maintained also.
Houses are started, whichever. We have to go out and inspect them.
But conditional uses, no?
No, it hasn't been, but we could do the same thing. And now we're, because of what's happened a few months back, we've corrected our process of conditional uses. We give them notice rate. As soon as council takes action, we send them notice that they need to submit a site plan and what the steps are once we get the findings of the ordinance.
I think a lot of people do leave here not knowing what just happened to them.
Majority of them have been told before they even, as they're going through the process.
Okay. But if it's not in writing, I know how some people get confused.
So now we're trying to put it right.
Or claim that they didn't hear it or nobody ever told me.
Some of them are years old and they've never been a problem. And then all of a sudden, and it's been the same process for years.
Right.
And now it's we're trying to fix it.
All right, so there is an effort to get some of the stuff. I would concur that conditional uses, anything with an expiration date ought to be somehow.
The only change in zone would be RPCs.
Right, RPCs,
conditional
uses. The other
ones are zoned or zoned because the zoning runs with land.
Right.
But the RPC, since it has conditions, if they don't act on it, we can void it.
Mm-hmm.
We've probably, just a ballpark number, we probably voided 10 or 12 RPCs.
Mm-hmm.
Salt Pond, we voided it twice before it ever got
right,
built.
Right.
Indian River Associates on Railway Road, north of Millville, it was either two or three times it was voided, and they finally built. They're building it now.
Yeah.
And they started it close to their time to get, it could have been voided again.
Well, when they come back in with a new application after being voided, do they have to comply with current laws at that time?
Yes, it's a reapplication.
So they may have lost a lot by letting it elapse.
Mm-hmm. And that one, Indian River Associates, I believe, was either twice and almost a third time, or else it did get the third.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't remember without looking at the spot.
But the point is, we're going to make an effort to try to get this stuff on some kind of computer that notices come. To your department.
Right. We have an indexing we started on a computer that we just make copies of and hand it to people when they ask for it for a subdivision back to 04. But there's a list from 04 all the way back.
Big list.
That I have.
Right.
And I just have to finish it.
Okay.
Slow process because somebody's got to do it.
I
notice you still have that book on the counter there.
I have that book. That book's like a Bible. It's right there for us.
Yeah.
And everybody uses it.
It's very, very
important.
But it's
getting a little beat up.
Is it the only book?
The only book.
So at some point we'll be able to look online and see that something's been applied for that you've accepted. And
I've got to work with the information system or data processing workout program that'll do it.
That would be very helpful. Yeah. That would be great.
Not a problem.
Appreciate it.
I still didn't help you about computers. I'm sorry.
No, it's a slow time, and I just think some of the stuff we ought to be looking at with the downturn in the economy, and
it's a good time for us too.
It's a good, as I say, it's a good time to be addressing some of these issues. Right.
Yes.
Mr. Lank, Mr. Phillips, you mind?
Yes.
Mr. Lank, is anything being placed on the computers concerning variances? I know that they don't expire like your conditional uses and some change of zones.
Hmm.
There are variances that have stipulations, 5 years or 2 years. It's on a computer.
Okay, because we've hit problems in the past when you get ready to go to closing. Survey will show that a building is too close to a lot line, and we can't find why because there's been no notation that there was a variance. And then later in the process, towards the end, we find that maybe a variance was given for that.
Yeah, the only place that would be a problem if it was prior to 83.
Okay.
And prior to 83, we didn't have a computer system, so it was all in books. And the same problem came up on subdivision, conditional use, and change of zone. That's why I'm going all the way back to the beginning. But there's less of those.
Right.
You know, we're in 1,800 conditional uses and almost 1,700 change of zones, but we're in thousands of Board of Adjustment cases.
Mm-hmm.
Probably in the, I don't even know what number, 13,000 maybe.
A lot every week or every couple of weeks.
Yeah,
it's a lot.
Like 10 to 15 cases a meeting twice a month since 1968.
Of variances.
Well, variances, special exceptions.
Special exceptions.
And saying yes all the time.
And in most cases, they are, if they had a stipulation, 5 years or 2 years is what they would have been. Mm-hmm. It's noted right on the computer, it comes up. But again, since 83.
Right.
So the ones that are prior to 83 would be the difficult ones.
Right.
Okay.
Right. I just know it really creates a problem oftentimes. You get the survey right at the last moment, realize that you need a variance, and then we hold up closing, and then sometime after the fact, someone pops out, they had a variance 20 years ago, and they said, wait a minute, we had this, why couldn't you pick it up? It wasn't looted anyplace.
In that case, too, your survey comes into the office, and Shane or I look at it at the computer and establish, we see some mistakes, and we can tell whether they had a permit for that. But again, it goes back to 83.
Right.
So then we have to go to assessment records and check the assessment records and figure out if there was a permit granted and then get a cop, pull a copy of the permit.
Okay.
So we have access to all those. So that gives us the information most of the time.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lawrence. Mm-hmm.
Next item is discussion on wastewater connect and disconnect permit requirements. And recently questions have arisen regarding the county's licensing and inspection processes for connections and disconnections to the county sewer system. Currently, to just highlight our current practice, to connect or disconnect to the county sewer system, we require that first a county inspector inspect and approve the work. And then second, that a plumber licensed by the state and the county would perform the work or at least oversee the work that's being done to connect to the county sewer system. The question has been raised, why do we require a licensed plumber to perform or oversee the work when a county inspector must also review and improve the work? And some of the reasons are that this is required in per county code also. Having a licensed plumber perform or oversee the work should mean that there's less problems with the work for the customer and less likelihood of damage to the county sewer system. Also, one of the requirements for the plumbing license by the county is a bonding and liability insurance requirement. If we want to change the permitting or plumber licensing or inspection requirements, as I understand it, it would require a change to the county code, an ordinance change.
Who's concerned about it? The plumbers or the people who are getting the paying for these bills?
We had a complaint by an individual who was not a licensed county plumber,
right,
but was demolishing a building and had experience with plumbing, and he ended up hiring a plumber, a licensed plumber, to oversee his work, basically, which some people have done.
Doesn't state law require your plumbing work to be, you know, it's got to be inspected, right?
Look at number five, George, and your folder.
I left my folder home. Can I borrow yours?
Sure.
What's number five say?
It says Kent County requires a permit for work to be done on sewer lines. They prefer a state licensed plumber, but there is no code requirement. They also will allow a general contractor to make the connection as a part of the project.
Okay.
That being a licensed plumber.
Hmm. I just.
That's not a state law.
Well, I thought number two says DENREC, you can't hook into a connection to septic end unless you're certified.
That's
septic system.
That's a septic system. Yeah.
Okay.
That's a septic, and also, well, you guys don't. The county, is that correct? Doesn't inspect septic systems.
No, we don't.
So that automatically is not part of this deal.
But do we want? I guess the question would be: do we want somebody just?
Well, I look at
saying you know what you're doing, you know what you're doing, different things. just go in there and start tearing things out and. Whatever that.
Well,
somebody talk to us. So come here and tell us what the
Mr. Tongue in here.
He's in my district.
Okay.
And he's a.
So you stirred this up.
He's a former ex-state policeman.
Okay.
He's also a bonded demolition person. He's also bonded with the state, so he's good for what he does. We can get back out of him. I don't know if we should say there should be bonded. the point he's making, and I guess I should argue for him, since he's been to Dave and I both. Been to you a couple of times, and also to me, that he feels it needs to be no middleman. Isn't that about what he's saying, Dave? That he feels that the county inspector should be sufficient enough to check this job and see if it's done right or not. That he should be able to remove the.
Right. He does not feel that we should require the plumbing license, the county plumbing license requirement.
Yeah, he doesn't, he doesn't.
Because he feels he can, he, like, in his case, he can do the work, he's capable of doing the work, and the county, his position is the county has an inspector to come out there and check the work, so why do we need the
county
licensed plumber to do it?
But re-owners, Joe.
Wait, we don't, wait.
We already have to have an inspector at this job.
Wait, we don't license plumbers. We don't have any, like, we have an approved list or something, right?
Yeah, it's.
Yeah, the state actually licenses plumbers, but we have a select list. You also have to be licensed with us to work on our county sewer system because we have.
Okay, so we do issue an actual license to work on our county systems?
Yes.
Okay.
If you had a good general outline.
Mike, why don't you, you better give up, get up here and lobby. All right, why don't you guys lobby why the process we have is good?
Well, I think it puts us in a difficult situation of trying to assess who is qualified to work and who is not qualified to do work if you are not licensed.
Yeah.
Also, our inspectors are not out there physically watching every piece of pipe
that's
be connected.
Right. That's right.
It's only the connection to our system that
that's
we're
right.
concerned about, right? The rest of it
right.
can be.
Well, maybe we better charge another $25 and have them there all the time.
Well,
instead of putting the middleman there.
Sam, our job is not to see if that house's plumbing's all done properly. Ours is just to make sure that the connection to our sewer system
protects.
Is done correctly. Now,
this is not
but the house, if somebody gets a house built, you have to have a licensed plumber.
George, you're on the other end. You're on the end of building. We're on the end of tearing down. This is demolition. This is just on one connection. Disconnect. That's it. Nothing else.
Right.
That's all this is about.
And we have had some problems with disconnects not being made properly when the house is demolished.
Mm-hmm.
The disconnect should happen first so that you can cap the line and protect
mm-hmm.
the sewer line.
Mm-hmm.
We have had numerous instances where the disconnect does not happen properly, and we've had two situations where concrete was pumped down into the sewer line.
Mm-hmm.
Other situations where construction debris found its way down into the sewer line. And frankly, those are the instances when we get construction debris down in our sewer lines, that's when we have backups. And when we have a backup, it doesn't come out of the top of the manhole. It goes into somebody's basement.
Okay,
so
Mike.
We just think it's a good protective measure.
Let me answer that
okay.
comment you made, though. You said we've had this problem. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
I don't doubt it a bit. But the point is, there was no permit. No permit.
That's correct.
Nobody knew this was going on. So it doesn't matter if you had a license permit, plumber or not.
Well,
if the ones we knew about, the ones we knew about were permits, did we have this problem? See, these guys came illegally, did this job. That's why we
that's
got
correct.
In trouble.
So, but our licensed plumbers know they need to get a permit, so the permits are routinely acquired, and we feel like that helps avoid this situation. I know Mr. Clark very well.
Yeah.
He's done work for the county, but it just puts us in a difficult situation and say, yes, Mr. Clark, you can work on the sewer system, but then turn around to Joe Snuffy and say, you're not good enough to work on
it. What is the total cost if we look at what we do now?
You got to hurry up, probably $150.
Just a minute. I'm just adding,
the permit, you get a disconnect permit, which is $100, which in theory pays for the time for our employee to go down
right,
and view the disconnect. And that's probably right. It's probably about $150.
$150 is the disconnect.
The higher
our inspector checks that. So that's
right.
The inspection and the disconnect. Okay.
That's correct.
But if it's done incorrectly, can't there
be say 150 or 250?
Well, I'm estimating if you had to hire the plumber to physically do the work, you might pay the plumber
$150,
and then you got
our permit. Pay the plumber's 150, so you're 250.
Right. Okay.
But the only way, it looks like to me, now maybe I'm wrong here, the only way to make sure that this non-licensed plumber does this correctly is our inspector has got to be sitting there watching
yes.
them close that line.
I'll defer to Gary or Steve. They can explain the process.
Which I would think would add more cost to us.
Basically, when they come out and to do a disconnect, they call up and schedule an appointment and say, I'm going to be here. I'd like to be here at such and such a time. Can you have your technician there? As much as possible, we try and honor that. There are occasions where the plumber will call up, say, I'm running behind, or what have you, and we try and work with them on that. But we try to have the technician there when that actual work is done, you know, the actual disconnect is made so that we can observe that it's properly, you know, capped off.
But you're saying there are times when somebody's not there and it does get connected?
Disconnected before we get there. I mean, there's...
And then you'll just look and inspect the work?
Yeah, it's good on paper, but it never works out in the field. This plumber's behind. We've had emergency locate. Our guy's got to go to it.
So you're comfortable at these, when this happens, because the individual you've had a relationship with before, these plumbers, you know them or something, and they're licensed by us, right, to do this work.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
There is a certain comfort level with that, as opposed to somebody who's unknown, is what Sam is saying, if we didn't have...
That would be my feeling, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, Sam, all I can tell you is, as a businessman, the guy who's contracted to tear down that house, the demo guy, he knows what it costs to do things. I mean, he's going to include that $150 or $250 in his cost. So if it costs $10,000 to take down this house and dispose of it, most of the time I know what, you know, if I'm a businessman, I know what, you know, here's my cost of this, what it's going to cost me. Any contractor building a house knows is, you know, he's going to, you know, have certain permits and certain things. So I don't think it's something that is real excessive, and I think there is some protections that they're talking about. So I don't know if, and I don't know if this is the first I've heard of any real complaints. So to have a knee-jerk reaction to one guy complaining, I don't know if that's an appropriate way to deal with this issue and change the ordinances and all that stuff, or just unless there's an overriding reason to change. And
I don't see it.
Like I said, as a businessman,
why is the middleman in here?
Well, what is his complaint?
It's not our county.
What is the complaint? The cost? Is it the complaint? The cost?
Well, he has to wait for a plumber and all this and that. Another hang up in between the process.
But again, these guys, I mean, you deal with that.
I'm taking his argument.
I understand what you're doing. I understand what you're doing. I'm just, I don't know if, again, we need to go change an ordinance, go through all that, because a demo guy had a time thing messed up. I've never heard a complaint from anybody.
They might think it's not worthwhile trying to get anything changed anyhow, because just go.
But is it, how critical is it to change? I'm saying we've been doing it for so long this way. I'm just trying to find out what is there any emphasis why we should change this ordinance because of this situation? If things have been running fairly smooth and we've got a system in place, so I don't know.
But remember, George.
You didn't sell me today.
The only problem they ever had was when they didn't have a permit. And still, if people get permits, they're still going to have problems.
Well, we understand there's always going to be that. Yes, I understand that. But I'm just saying, is the process we have, is it burdensome? It doesn't sound like it, because one guy's only complaining.
I don't really think so.
Well, there's a cumulative effect. I mean, in defense of this gentleman, of the gentleman who brought this to our county's attention, you know, it is one more fee on top of a process that's probably, you know, multifaceted and very expensive over time. I'm not saying that we need to rewrite the ordinance, but it is something I think we should consider. And this is the first time I've kind of got my arms around it. I know that, you know, we've done work on the farm that would seem simple to us, but yet we've got to go hire a contractor with a license to do certain aspects to comply, and it gets frustrating after time because it just seems like there's one more piece of red tape you've got to deal with and another fee you've got to deal with, and now you got to pay licensed people to do something you could probably do yourself. So I empathize with Mr. Clark and Mr. Wilson.
But it's not, Joe, it's not like as if we're sitting here today and trying to add in a new part of the process. This is a process that's been in place for how long, like 20 years?
At least
15 to 20 years, Sam, there's been nary a concern about it. But I'm just saying, I understand adding more red tape. But my point is, I don't see an overriding reason to add.
In other words, the red tape's our, George says, let it stay to our
clothes. Well, I don't think it's that burdensome of the red tape. It just seems most of the contractors I know understand that they need permits and they need to schedule things, and they do it.
I have no problem with the
And if it's the cost, I mean...
I had no problem with the county.
Ant's implied it might be the cost, and you're implying it might be the time delay, so...
No, I think it's all of the above.
Well, again, I think work has been done, and people have done it. We've done a lot of connections in the last 20 years.
I had no problem with the permits because the inspector knows what's going on.
Sam, I'd like to take it under advisement.
And I had no problem, and I think the inspector should be there.
Mr. President, can we take this under advisement? For that.
Is there any kind of consensus among the council to take action?
No, not with me. No, I think once you open the door, Mr. Clark might be very capable, but once you open that door to others, unlicensed plumbers to do the work, you're in trouble, I think.
Trash. Mr. Vincent, have you any thoughts?
Well, I mean, I can understand what the gentleman was asking, but I guess in my mind, the only way we could do anything would probably require some kind of new ordinance, but if we're going to allow anybody to do that, it would have to be, it might cost more. It would have to be mandatory that our inspectors got to be sitting there watching them do it.
I have no problem with that.
I mean, that's, and that might cost more to do, might have to charge them more to make sure he's there. He might have to go and come back a second time if they're late or whatever, but, you know what I mean? But I can't see letting somebody do that without being a licensed plumber.
Thank you.
Unless somebody that knows what they're doing, which are our county people, so they're watching exactly what's happening.
It appears the consensus is to take this under advisement at the present time. If there is an opportunity to address the red tape in general, I would appreciate anyone bringing forth those suggestions.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Mr. Baker.
Yes. And the last item is the administrator's report. The first item is the Airport Advisory Committee. We'll be meeting on Wednesday, May 26th at 7 p.m. at the County Emergency Operations Center. Primary agenda item for the meeting will be to review the proposed airport policy rules and regulations. Bookmobile summer schedule is attached for June through August. The schedule reflects assistance to the Georgetown Library that will be closed effective May 29th until it reopens sometime in July at the new location. We have offered the Bookmobile to help the individual local libraries when they're closed and while they move. Nanticoke Memorial Hospital EMS Advisory Committee attaches a copy of a certificate of appreciation for the Sussex County EMS administrative team, which they received from the Nanticoke Memorial Hospital EMS Advisory Committee. We wish to thank the county EMS team, including Bob Stewart, Alan Barnes, Joe Hopple, Robert Murray, as well as other staff for the work that has been duly recognized. Delaware State Police report for April 2010. This report shows 470 felony arrests, 4,345 traffic arrests, 107 DUI arrests that occurred during April. And finally, in recognition of the contributions and sacrifices of the men and women who died while in the military service, county offices will be closed May 31st. The county council will not be meeting on June 1st, also in honor of this holiday. The next regularly scheduled meeting will be June 8th at 10 a.m. And I have one item that Mr. Lank brought to my attention, and this is an article on the National Association of Counties that is not in the report about the action the county council took to lend houses to the Habitat for Humanity. And there's pictures in there, and this is the newsletter that goes to all the different counties that are members of the National Association of Counties. I think it's quite an honor to be included in there for an innovative program.
Very nice.
Wow.
Yeah, very good.
Anything else for the county administrator? I'd like to take a moment to recognize the most honorable state representative, Dave Wilson, who is in the chambers. Mr. Wilson, have you got anything for us today?
Just keeping taxes in Sussex low.
Okay.
Glad to have you, sir.
Keep those unfunded mandates up.
Could you tell us what he means by the most?
The most honorable. He got the most votes.
Yeah.
Mr. Hal Godwin.
And we may ask, this is a legislative update, Dave. We might ask you some questions. Just don't run out now. You might want to know where you stand on these issues.
Might be a test.
That's right. Be a test if you're even familiar with these issues. Do you read any of these bills, Dave?
Glad to see you.
Good. Thank you, sir.
We're successful on
Sundays. Because I was going to say, if you didn't read them, we would nominate you to go to Washington, D.C.
Don't pick on the new guys. You've been around 27 years. Don't pick on the new guys.
I'm not really that old.
Mr. President, members of council, I'd like to review some concerns that we have currently in the legislature. I can start by telling you that a number of the bills that we've been watching have either been withdrawn or appear to be inactive at this point. So that is good news. On this report that I've given you, the things that I really wanted to lift out, of course, I've typed in red. House Bill 333, the bill that will allow us to use the JP Court for sewer connection purposes, has passed the House, and it's also been released from Senate Committee. So I'm pushing hard for the sponsor to get that on the ready list and to have that voted on in the Senate when they come back in session next Tuesday. And I'm fairly sure we will get that bill passed and signed by the governor before the end of the session. The next bill, 352, is the bill we discussed at 2 weeks ago. That bill has also passed the Senate and the House and has gone to the governor for a signature. The casino bill, House Bill 194, still lays on the Speaker's table in the House, and that bill threatens from basically if the majority leader wants to reactivate that bill and have it voted on, he can do that pretty much at his call. And that bill we have a lot of concern about. I've been following it carefully. I've spoken with with Mr. Schwarzkopf, who appears to be running the bill, and I've also spoken with Mr. Wilson and some of our representatives from Sussex County, and I don't think that bill has a lot of energy behind it right now, but that could all change. We have 5 weeks of session starting on June 1st. There is one new bill that I wanted to go over with you. This bill was just introduced on the 11th of May, just a few days ago, Senate Bill 265. As I read the bill carefully, I found one small concern in the bill. This is an agriculture bill, and I want to first give you a little history as to where it came from. I spoke with Senator Venables, who is one of the primary sponsors, and asked him why this bill had been written. He explained to me that there had been an instance in Odessa where a farmer was unloading a load of soybeans from a truck, which created a very large cloud of dust. The dust went onto some neighbor's car nearby. The neighbor called Denrek with a complaint. Denrek actually fined the farmer $250. So this bill is to essentially stop that sort of nuisance offense for farmers doing their business. I assured Mr. Venables, and I also spoke with Secretary Key about this bill, that we are in support of agricultural processes from top to bottom, and we really don't want to get in the way of the farmers' needs. But the thing that concerned me, the copy of the bill I attached to the back of what I handed you, Senate Bill 265, on line 8, I've highlighted four words that concern me. Let me read the sentence. It says, agriculture-related infrastructure including, but not limited to, those four words concern me, not limited to, grain elevators, bins, feed mills, silos, processors of agricultural products, and suppliers of products used in agriculture. If you remember, a year or two ago, we had some very spirited discussions in the legislature about agrotourism, and there were certain things that were defined as allowed in agrotourism and not, and we wrangled back and forth with the legislature for several weeks. Finally, Sussex County was exempted from that, but in Newcastle County, they continue to have agrotourism permitted under a law that we objected to.
Like there's
Paintballs and
mazes and
amusement type things, what they were after. And we don't really have a problem with that, as you told me, but you wanted to make sure you had the opportunity to review those kind of features before they were added to a farm to make sure that it was being done appropriately.
Right. Well, I
so
think,
these words, yeah, but not limited to, concern me, because could an agricultural operation be converted into something else that you didn't really intend it to
like
be?
Like paintball.
Right.
Or motocross.
And Ed Key agreed with me. He said, that's a very good point. I hadn't seen that. He said, let's see if we can have an amendment drawn up that will specify what the ag operations are and then sort of nail that down. Not, in other words, not permitting amusement parks and Ferris wheels and all sorts of tourism things under the blanket of ag that we weren't really supporting. So there could well be an amendment being offered, and it'll be offered, I hope, by Ed Key and the ag folks in Delaware rather than us, because I would want it to go through them, but I wanted to make sure you knew what we were doing, what I was discussing with them. And if you have some other directions to give me, please do that.
Well, Mr. Godwin, they didn't mention crop dusting. I get a lot of complaints about that. But that would be included since it says...
Well, it should be added. That's a good point. That's a feature that should be added to this list of things that can be included.
Yeah.
The not limited to allows all of that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The words not, but the words not limited to can mean a lot of other things. That's what caused me concern.
A little broad, you're saying.
That's what I thought. And as I said, Secretary Key agreed.
Anything.
In Sussex County, Hal, if I'm not mistaken, if a farmer wanted to have an amusement type operation to complement his farm, we have the conditional use, right? We've done that with, I think, mazes and stuff.
Right.
Or I think Lawrence has a 3-day permit.
Yeah, that was for the other. That really applies to one of the earlier bills that we're. That applies to House Bill 352, which is the one that talks about outdoor events.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that.
Right.
And Lawrence assured us that he does issue 3-day permits.
Yeah, we've been doing that.
So we do. That's right. We do that as a matter of business.
We do accommodate these types of activities.
Correct.
Already. Okay.
Correct.
Hold on a second. Are you saying we have to have a permit to have a maze to a cornfield for somebody to take a tour?
If it's set up as a business where they're charging an admission for it and it's part of something that's not agricultural, Lawrence issues a permit for that.
You mean if I wanted to cut a route through my cornfield, take them on a tour and get them lost or whatever?
No, if you have...
And I charge a dollar down here this end to get in and walk through that cornfield, I've got to come here to get a permit.
I'll give you some examples. The Williamsville, the Ellen McGee with the Berry Farm, she had a conditional use permit. Isn't that right, Vance, wasn't it? A conditional use permit to, or Dave, whoever remembers this, to do the maze. And did the Johnsons down there also do a maze? And we've had a couple permits, conditional use permits for, year-round type of operations that last a long time, indefinitely. So, yeah. I mean, you got to admit, if you do have like a maze, now if it operates just around Thanksgiving or something like that, we still require it, but it can generate a lot of traffic and stuff and change the whole character of a agricultural area or rural area. So we have done that, Sam, yes. That's how we've addressed it. How about a paintball? How about if you wanted to have a paintball thing on your farm, do you think you should be able to just start a paintball operation?
That might be a little different than cutting the route through my cornfield.
Right. But, you're charging admission for all these things. That's the difference is if you probably did it for, just open to the public or just had it free, it probably would be no question about it. I think it's when you turn it into a business, it changes its complexion a little bit.
It's a business, George.
But I understand that, Sam. But when you start, anyway, there's a difference. There's a little bit.
I don't know.
But we have been doing it. We do accommodate and we have accommodated.
Those red tapes we don't want to do away with.
Can you come up and address this?
How do we do it, Jim?
Are you privy to the discussion?
No.
At what point does a farmer's entertainment operation require a conditional use permit?
It depends on what it is.
Corn maize.
I think we've had two or three that have gone to public hearing
conditional use. Right.
What is it in the code that trips that requirement?
It would fall under the so-called catch-all phrase, any commercial, residential, industrial use, if they charge a fee.
Three of them. Mm-hmm.
Well, but you pick operations don't, even though they're charging a fee.
The what?
You pick operations don't require.
That'd be a permitted use in the AR1 district.
Oh.
Are
they're not charging.
Phases permitted uses in an AR1 district?
Under a conditional use.
Only under a conditional use.
The you pick them, Vance, is not,
no,
they're not charging admission, they're selling the product, right? It's a difference.
It's basically the same as a commercial greenhouse.
Right.
It's permitted on more than 5 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a number of mazes, and it's funny, every maze we approved doesn't operate anymore because they didn't make any money. Nobody ever came.
How about Mr. Pepper's you pick operation? Is he required to have a permit?
On 24. Not for the U-Pick, he wouldn't, but he was one that had a conditional use for the maze.
Mm-hmm.
There was one out.
He was violated, probably.
I'm not sure. There was one out on Route 18 just west of Georgetown, and a former commission member had one.
And they're no longer there.
I don't believe so.
I don't think there's a maze in the county, is there? Except here in this room.
I think.
Yeah, that's the maze.
What do you think, Dave? In Dover, I'm sorry I left you out, David.
think it's, I think Pop, or Mr. Pepper's operates in the fall, and the one out on Route 18 west of town here by the Country Barn operates.
If I had somebody come over and want to ride my horse and I charge them 50 cents to get on it, I'd have to permit, right?
I doubt that, Sam. Now you're getting extreme.
Well, it's ridiculous what you guys are saying anyhow, as far as I'm concerned.
This isn't something new, is it?
No. Sam, how come you didn't, if this has upset you so much, how come we haven't heard from you before on this issue?
Well, it's only been
going on like this for a number of years.
It's only been going on.
Did you just get aware of this stuff?
George, I've been on the private sector. I've not been sitting up here making the laws. I've been abiding by them.
We haven't made many laws.
And a lot of them are paying the neck.
I agree with Mr. Wilson. All right.
You were here too making some of that, weren't you?
I was voting against most of them.
Unless it was in his district, then he voted for them.
Regulation, what else have you got for us?
Yes, sir, I just wanted you to be aware of Senate Bill 265, and again, if you have opinions, please call me and let me know what you would like me to do, but it appears there may be an amendment coming of which I'll keep you apprised of on that agriculture-related bill.
Well, they think they could charge a little bit for getting dust on that car. The state would probably let that thing, well, they would get that passed. They'd make a buck or two on it.
I'd like to make you aware of a couple other things that are slightly outside the purview. House Bill 30 is not directly about us, but I wanted to make you aware of it because it could be at some point in time. House Bill 30 relates to school impact fees. Now, the bill has been amended, and I didn't include it in your package.
Okay, okay.
It's been amended to restrict it only to Appaquinimic, which is Middletown School District. But what it says essentially is that there will be a school impact fee for all new homes built of 6% of their construction cost. That's a pretty big number.
Wow. That'll stop everything, for sure.
The bill originally was statewide. It got amended down just to Appaquinimic School District a couple of weeks ago. So I wanted you to be aware of that. It's out there. I'm watching it. I went to a hearing where it was to be discussed. I just want to stay in tune with it because if it threatens Sussex County, then I'll make you aware of it immediately.
State collect the fee?
Yes.
Well, Cape District's elementary and middle schools are full. So,
are you in favor of that, Joe?
Wanted you to know that Mr. Moore and I are still working on a piece of legislation that could adjust our tax warrant date from April 30 to June 30, which is something that our staff have asked for. It would make our property tax date line up with our budget, and our staff claims that that would make things work smoother in-house. So Mr. Everett Moore and I are still working on that. I do have the draft legislation, and when I say draft, it has not yet been introduced. I got this morning, as a matter of fact. This is the legislation that will take over the Recorder of Deeds and Register of Wills by the state. It hasn't been introduced. I would expect to see it introduced very soon after they reconvene on June 1st. When it's introduced, I'll make sure you have copies of it immediately because this is something that we'll have to be very very much concerned about and work with our state legislators to make sure that our interests are represented properly. That's pretty much all I have at this point. We'll keep you apprised of anything else that comes up. I feel very good about the one bill that we're working to promote, House Bill 333. I think we're going to get that one done, and that's all I had to report.
Where are we on the change from rep district to council district for our appointments to planning and zoning and board of appeals, board adjustment?
We're waiting for a bill.
Who's supposed to write a bill?
From who?
Yes, I believe Mr. Vanderslice had drafted that bill.
Okay.
Chop it around and get some sponsors, please.
Yes, we'll do.
Mr. Wilson is in the back.
Why don't we ask Mr. Wilson maybe if he wants to, is there any bills in Dover that would affect the county that you have any concerns about?
Well, the one that Mr. Dollar just mentioned, I think is the main concern for the county right now.
You better come down, Dave.
Get you down here.
I just wanted everybody, those people see you dressed up.
I can't speak to that, but please.
I know, but we like hearing you.
Mr. Goblin's concerned, and I spoke with Mr. Baker on it yesterday. I just got an update yesterday about 11:30 about the committee meeting to take the row offices, and I think it's something that this council needs to be very well apprised of and be sure that you get well represented. I understand it's going to be coming up on the 3rd. That's a Thursday after we go back in session, and I think it behooves council to be represented and be sure that your voice is heard. But the understanding I get that they take the row offices, and then they're going to raise the fees, and they'll give part of it back to the county. What part, that has yet been to be seen. But, you know, it's a revenue enhancer for the state, and I'm sure I'm not well-respected probably on the state level, but I'm looking out for the county's interest. You know, I have the county at heart, and I feel that, you know, if you're going to take this revenue enhancer from the county, somebody's got to make it up somewhere, and it's going to have to be done at the county.
You better than any would know because you've been at a row office.
Right.
I was understand the relationship.
In, Chancery, and Chancery was not a money-making office, so we didn't feel real impact. The county didn't. But when you lose deeds and wills, you're going to definitely see the impact here in this county. And I can't figure they got that kind of support other than their proposal is going to be that we're going to raise the fees after the state takes it. They're going to consider to raise the fees, and then they're going to give a portion of it back to the county. What portion is yet to be determined. But who better knows how to run the county than
the county.
Than the county. That's my argument, and I stand by that. And right. As soon as I heard it yesterday, I called Mr. Baker because I felt that the county ought to know about it. I didn't plan to even be here today, but I happened to be in Georgetown. I said, I'll stop in. But you need to be aware of it, and it'd be, well, if every councilman was there that day it comes up, and I'll keep Mr. Baker apprised.
I'll tell you before you leave. Do you have any senses of how the representatives are going to vote here in Sussex County?
I think Sussex County you'll be pretty well. I think that the Sussex County representation should be to leave it in the county. I can't say when you get over on the western side of the county or majority leader, he's probably going to have to look at what the governor wants. You know, that's kind of the political side of it.
The eastern side, you mean?
The eastern side of the county. Yeah. I feel that over on this side of the county, anyone knows anything about financing and what the county is going through, and you're already subsidizing state. You give them, what, $1.8 million in state police funding. Kent County does nothing, and Newcastle has their own police force. So, you know, if you're going to take 2.3 or 2.6 and Sussex County takes 1.8 away from them, they haven't done a whole lot.
Are they aware, Dave, that the county councilman throughout the state of Delaware, Kent and Sussex and Newcastle have all got together and we voted not to go into this program?
No, I wasn't aware of it. You know, I know that it started out back in March. It was the first rift I'd heard about it. And I said something to a couple of councilmen about it, and it kind of died. But now it's not going to die now. It's going to be something, and if you realize how soon it can happen, it goes through the 145th General Assembly anytime between now and June the 30th. And if you'll recall what happened with Chancery Court, it came up again in February of the following year, and John Brady was your Chancery Court, and the county didn't have to pay him out because he ran the next term for Recorder of Deeds and was successful. But if not, they're going to leave a county with paying for the office holder for 4 years. It could be gone in 30 days,
right.
After 30 days after January 1st. When we go back in session, whoever goes back. But it's a real concern for the county, I think. I'm not here to put the state down. I'm on the state level, but I feel that you guys need to be aware of what's happening to you right here in Sussex.
Well, when you're up there talking to your colleagues, remind them
that
all the counties have voted.
I didn't know the county's position. I know Kent County said they didn't have a problem with it at one time. The office holder for Kent County told me he didn't have a problem. He thought it was a good idea.
Right. The levy court representatives and the Newcastle County councilmen that were representing the Delaware Association of County meeting that we held, that was held last month, they all, I believe it was unanimous,
right,
to oppose this suggestion for the state to take over those two offices. And it's my understanding they will have a letter going to legislators
Bob Maxwell up there, and he'll be able to.
We have a letter going. I talked to Representative Wilson yesterday, and we have a letter going to all our Sussex representatives and the Sussex County Association of Towns also voted to support the county in this.
Our county's Register of Will and Recorder of Deed officially made a statement on this?
I don't know if they have officially, but it's my understanding that they do not, that they oppose it.
Okay.
You know, that.
I know Kent County, the office holder in Kent County said that he felt that it was would probably be good for it to go state. Now, that was back in March. I haven't talked to him recently, but that was Kent County.
Register Wills.
Register Wills.
Okay.
But I don't know his position on it now, but back in March, he thought it was a good idea. But Chancery Court was completely different. That court didn't make money. But you're talking about a revenue enhancer when you're talking about recorder deeds and register wills. And you guys have just worked the budget, so you know what the money that this brings into this county.
But he didn't talk for his councilman, I can assure you, because they voted the other way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah. Thank you.
Jim Hickett.